And it's time now for our public affairs show, the new WHFR Journal. This is WHFR Dearborn. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, April 3rd, 2009. Hi there, my name is Jay Koronick. I'm your host for this hour, and we're going to be talking about local news and alternative views. So issues that are of vital concern to Dearborn and the surrounding areas here, just outside of Detroit, sometimes even Detroit issues too. For example, last week, and I'm always doing this in the show because I get so busy listening to myself, I mean reading all these stories, that I sometimes forget what I promised that would happen during the hour. One of the special audio commentaries that we get from a progressive, yes, he is. He is a progressive commentator out of Austin, Texas. Yes, there are progressives in Texas, is Jim Hightower. And he is very much a populist, folks. I mean, he really is a man for the people, of the people, by the people, and so on. And he has very clever and insightful and extremely timely commentaries that he has written books about, of course, and also has recorded these that are available to us for no charge, thank goodness. And so think about these things and take a listen. This was one I promised you last week, which was brand new last Friday, March 27th, and still relevant now. It tells the story of Goldman Sachs. That's not Golden Sex, by the way. No. Take a listen.
At least one Wall Street investment house is stepping up to help some of the people who've been squeezed by the financial crisis that Wall Street caused. Goldman Sachs, once considered the star of the street before it crashed in a pile of greed and had to be salvaged by a multi-billion dollar bailout from you and me, is this angel of mercy. It has announced a new loan program to assist folks who lost money because of their investments with Goldman. What an altruistic gesture. Before we give the bank a big gold star, however, let's note that regular folks do not qualify. For example, maybe you lost a chunk of your retirement money because of the firm's collapse. Sorry, no loan for you. No, this beneficent program is strictly reserved for Goldman's own senior bankers. These special ones were paid millions of dollars in the golden years, and they invested wads of that cash in a couple of the bank's elite investment pools. One of the perks of being a high-ranking Goldman Sachser was that you got access to these very profitable funds. But, oh, cruel fate, even these have plummeted in value, and many of the bank's 100 top executives are reported to be down to their last $5 million. Given their gilded lifestyles, this leaves them scrambling to meet payments. One example of their cash crunch is that they now are having to pay their taxes on fat bonuses that they were paid early last year. Back then, they were riding high, and they thought the party would never end, so they spent all of their bonus money on assorted toys. That means they don't have enough money today to cover their tax obligations. This is Jim Hightower saying, I know how badly you must feel for them, but not to worry, for Goldman is galloping to their rescue with loans ranging up to hundreds of thousands of dollars for each banker. See, Wall Street takes care of its own, even if they have to use our bailout dollars to do it.
Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publisher of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
And we're back here on the new WHFR Journal. This is WHFR.fm, you know, the station making waves. That means we do things a little differently here, and especially with local news and alternative views. Although certainly saying bad things about bankers is not too alternative these days, except it seems like not many people are listening in our government, even in the Obama government. Oh, they're saying, yes, we will regulate. We'll make them pay taxes on those bonuses. And some of them decided to give some of the money back because I guess they weren't down to their last 5 million. They still had millions and millions. And so what the heck, giving back a couple million just to have the press stop camping out and the protesters stop camping out on their front lawns. As you might have seen on some of the news media this week. Along with many other people here, we want you to just think about the responsibilities of the government and the country and what the appropriate needs should be for our society. And let those opinions be known to not just to your talk show hosts, but to your elected representatives. They're the ones that can change the laws. They're the ones that can enforce regulations that might already be there. And if they don't get a response from you, then it won't be as good. Now, it's interesting to me, I saw a survey that was done in terms of what is the most effective way to influence one of your lawmakers. In other words, sometimes they don't pay very much attention to certain ways to contact them. And I thought, well, maybe that's email. I thought maybe email to your elected representative would be lower on the poll than a personal phone call or, let's say, an in-person visit. And it is lower than an in-person visit. But in-person visits, whether you're, you know, back in the home community, like the Dearborn reps here back here in Dearborn, or in Washington, D.C., that gets their attention. That has the highest status of importance to them. So anytime you can see your elected representatives, this goes the same for state, I assume it's kind of the same world. Politics is politics, pretty much. And, you know, whether it's state or local or federal, get there in person if you can, wherever you can get to them. You see them shopping, tell them what you think, quick, you know, don't interrupt, intrude, but, you know. Still, that is what matters most to them, apparently. That's what sticks in their mind more. That's what they give the highest status to. And email is in the middle of all these other ways to contact them. And amazingly, writing them a letter is close to the bottom. And I don't believe that should be that way, because writing a letter takes a lot more effort, I think, than writing an email, because often letters can be longer and more detailed and give rationales and helpful thoughts and so on. But apparently not. So what about a call to the representative's office? I don't remember. That's somewhere in the middle also. So a call, but I think it's less than email even. That email to elected representative, according to the survey of federal government senators and representatives, is more highly valued and more responded to as important than messages that come via the phone, but just by a little, live person phone call, and a lot more than letters, which I think is really unfortunate, and something's ought to change there. We have people that can't read in the representative's offices? That seems just wrong. But maybe they think, only a few people can write letters, and they go to a lot of trouble, and they don't represent the people. Maybe they think that email, because a lot of people now have access, although not everybody, which is a crime, I think, that email represents the public sentiment more because it's more easily done than writing a letter. And that may somewhat be true. Certainly it's more timely. If there's an issue happening right away, you don't want to wait for what's called snail mail, your letter, to be delivered 2, 3, 4 days later after you mail it, because they just won't get a chance to see it in time if something is happening right away that you want to state your opinion on. So even the White House now is supposedly going through their email regularly and much more so, and valuing it much higher than the previous administration president, whose name for some reason I've already been able to forget. No due respect. No disrespect intended, please. Okay. So, but tying into that, we'll have another commentary, if I remember that I've got it ready here, about Jim Hightower talking about the Afghanistan issue, because that's actually controversial. Now, the people that were hawks to go into Iran, they said, oh, yeah, let's keep going in Afghanistan. Well, we kind of won in Iraq, and we can, you know. So if you really love war and you think war will bring about democracy, that is not the opinion of yours truly. And I want to, of course, mention our disclaimer that the opinions on this show, including mine, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. Okay. Even though I hope so. And my opinions, don't let them just instantly become your opinions. You can quote me if you want to, but that doesn't mean that I'm right. Okay. You, if you're stimulated, and I talked to someone after my show last week, and they got into a discussion at work about one of the issues I brought up, you know, and they concluded after 20 minutes of discussion among them, thoughtful discussion, they didn't agree with me. And I thought that was wonderful. I thought that was great because the free interplay of ideas and a little bit of thoughtful, not just, oh, Gornick's crazy, you know, something like that. That's not rational. And sometimes I may not be rational either, but you know, let me stimulate you. If you will, if you're listening to the show now, I hope that's what you're expecting. And if you disagree, find out why. Figure out why and come up with a good reason. If you don't have a good reason why you disagree, then maybe I'm right. Okay, so, but never believe anybody just because of what they say, just because they're on radio or TV. That's totally the wrong thing to do. In fact, a lot of the people are not as well-read and educated as I am, I think. They mustn't be because of what some of them say, and yet they're on major cable TV news channels. And Jon Stewart, of course, on his Daily Show, Mondays or Thursday nights on Comedy Central, he does a great job of satirizing and, through satire, also criticizing a lot of that news media about how ridiculous they are and how inconsequential should be many of their comments. And how not very well researched. For example, often on The Daily Show, and we ought to have a whole show that does nothing but this, you had a representative is speaking against one of the rules in the Senate, a Republican, about the right to filibuster or not in certain circumstances. And he said, it's just not the way it should be. It's just not fair. Well, 4 years ago, they dug up some footage that right there from C-SPAN on the floor of the Senate. He, Republican majority leader or one of the leaders, and he was saying, this is the way it should be. Forget those Democrats. This is our rule, and this is what we follow, and it's majority rule, and it shouldn't have filibusters in these particular situations. So amazing how simply a change in perspective, like you're in power and then you're not, can totally change your view on some of the rules. And I don't know which way is the better rule in that case, to tell you the truth. I always thought filibuster was just wrong. I mean, you got to limit those. I mean, just because two or three people for some bills, if they feel like it and help with water and sandwiches and so on, can continue for days and days and days tying up the work of the Senate. In this kind of world, we don't need that. So you ask my opinion? Okay, I'm against unlimited filibusters in all situations. And so we hope that you will take that into account and see what you think. And let your elected representatives know where you stand. Right now, the Democrats, on some bills that are going through, apparently, and I forget the criteria, they don't have to worry about filibusters because they have a majority vote, and then it's filibuster-free somehow. Okay, let's take a look, as we are wont to do here on the show, with a couple of other things. And I often forget to read Jack Lessenberry's column to you and share it, even if I think it's worthy of your attention. The column I'm referring to appears weekly in the free newspaper, the Metro Times. So look for that weekly, if only for Jack Lessenberry's editorial opinion, not the editorial for the paper, but the editorial opinion. And this week from Wednesday, April Fool's Day. No, he wasn't fooling here. He talks about why GM failed. And, of course, he writes well. So listen up here. Here's Jack Lessenberry from the Metro Times this last Wednesday. In Motown, he says, our core industry and economy have been crumbling faster than our buildings. Politics and Prejudices, which I began writing 16 years ago this month, that's the title of his editorial column in the Times Herald here, Says, comes out this week on Ta-da, April Fool's Day. Traditionally, columnists who hit the streets on April 1 often, especially if they're feeling lazy, write tongue-in-cheek spoof pieces that pretend to reveal something impossible to believe, such as that Vice President Dick Cheney actually has a heart. Or, if they want to be really absurd, they pretend that either Jennifer Aniston or Rachel Ray or Elizabeth Hasselbeck or the Octomom or John Boehner, I don't know who he is. I guess I don't watch enough cable TV news. Or Sarah, Track, Trig, Twit, or Harvey's Bristol Cream Palin have ever uttered three words worth hearing. You did hear the bad news, I guess, more than a week ago, right? That Sarah Palin, the governor of Alaska, that her daughter, one of those names, I guess, her boyfriend, who got her pregnant, I think with her permission, out of wedlock, has now decided not to marry her. Or maybe, you know, the daughter and Sarah Palin and Sarah Palin's family decided that, you know, he's really not responsible enough to be a husband now or maybe even later. And so maybe they made it look like or made him make a statement that it was his decision to wait a while until he's more mature. Yeah, he's obviously not mature yet because he wasn't mature enough to realize his responsibilities and have a job and education and be able to support a family. So I'm happy that she's not going with this irresponsible person. But however you feel about that, it's too bad she doesn't have a husband. Yeah, well. Okay, you are what you do, right? And if you do stupid, irresponsible things, then that's what you are, and you shouldn't be rewarded with a lifetime commitment from somebody else, I think. In any event, Jack goes on, all April Fool's Day comments aside, he says, that's what you might see this year, but imagine that I had wanted to write an April Fool's column back when I started. What if I had written this, he says, April 1, 2009, America's first African-American president today insisted on the resignation of the head of General Motors as his price for continuing to prop up the failed automaker, which has lost millions of dollars every hour for the past 4 years. Incredibly, there were some who still defended Rick Wagoner, who first drew notice outside of Detroit when he insisted on being flown to Washington in his corporate jet last December to beg for a bailout. Outgoing President George W. Bush agreed 3 months ago to pour $13.4 billion of taxpayer cash into GM, whose stock is now worth less per share than a Big Mac. Meanwhile, the president said Chrysler has 30 days to merge with Fiat or die. Slightly exaggerated, but that's his April 1st, April Fool's column that he thought maybe a year ago no one would believe. And of course, it's all true. But he didn't say that Chrysler could merge with Fiat or die, just merge with Fiat or go broke and go out of business. Basically, he said that in those, in maybe not those specific terms. But and then Lessenberry goes on, well, I wouldn't have written that even if I had thought of it for one very good reason. Satire, to be effective, has to have some connection to reality. None of this would have been imaginable in that far-off Neolithic world of 1993 when he started writing this column, any more than the thought that then-President Bill Clinton would fail at health care, but to go on to give cigars, blue dresses, and sex a bad name. Yet everything in my mock April Fool's column came true this week. Back to a serious look at what really happened and what we were facing here in Motown, where our core industry and economy had been crumbling faster than our buildings. As I am writing this early Monday, the media is casting the forced ouster of Wagoner as a quid pro quo, the government demanding his head in return for 60 days of another sack of cash. That may in fact have been true in one narrow political sense, true and totally justified, says Lessenberry. If you thought that insular Detroit press wasn't still in bed with the tone-deaf, dull-witted automotive industry dinosaurs, let's not mince words, Jack. You only need leaf through the Detroit papers. Oops, forgot. You probably can't today, since they won't deliver them to your house most days anymore. That's right. News and Free Press in Detroit are now just, I think, 3 days a week if you have home delivery. They do publish the paper, but try to find it on those other days. Unless you have, of course, unless you're on the correct side of the digital divide and you actually have internet access that you look at and use every day. So, yeah, the media aren't much help. The traditional commercial media aren't much help anymore. He says, but the world's first money-losing monopoly was still slinging fish wrappers daily back when President Obama's Auto Task Force came to town last month. The Free Press didn't even pretend to be a newspaper. It turned itself into one giant begging bowl and house ad for the auto industry. The Detroit News wasn't as bad, but it ran remarkably hypocritical and naive editorial last Sunday, criticizing the president for bashing the auto industry. Hypocritical because the faux, that means false, folks, F-A-U-X, free marketers of the news editorial page would be screaming if Obama suggested bailing out any other industry not centered in Detroit. Naive, because it was clear that the president had decided to give the auto industry more time and money and needed to at least cuff the welfare-seeking bastards, and I can say that, I think, because it's not my word, around a bit. What he actually said was, there has been a lot of mismanagement in the auto industry over the last several years. Quote, unquote, that's President Obama. There has been a lot of mismanagement in the auto industry over the last several years, and as Lessenberry says, that's putting it mildly. Talk about understatement, I say. Nonetheless, somewhat tactful, somewhat decent. President Obama is nothing but decent speaking. And I like that. That part of him I totally like. He is cool, he is calm, and he is decent speaking. Although a lot of us feel he better get a little more harsh and take charge-ish in private. Nonetheless, however you feel about that, General Motors, Lessenberry goes on to say, has lost $78 million during Wagoner's 4 years running it into the ground. He apparently was a nice guy who got along well with everyone else in the old boy network. That, and he evidently figured out a way to sell Buicks in China. China, says Lessenberry. Matter of fact, they now sell more of them in China than in this country. I understand that since I was once unlucky enough to own one here. Wagoner showed how much he and his whole insular inbred industry hadn't learned when he had himself flown in his corporate jet to Washington to beg for money. Over the last few months, he demonstrated that he still hadn't learned very much as he dragged his feet on doing the necessary and drastic things needed to give his company a chance to survive. If you want to know why this was, just read David Halberstam's magnificent book, and Halberstam, that's H-A-L-B-E-R, R-S-T-A-M, has written many books. I think one on Vietnam and Iraq War, and he's a great in-depth investigative reporter and book writer. Okay, and he has written this book called The Reckoning, which is a history of Nissan and Ford, but is really about what's wrong in the whole U.S. auto industry. What's wrong in a nutshell is that it is a narrow, insular culture. Those who make it to the top of the heap, like Rick Wagoner, tend to be white Anglo-Saxon Protestant males who have worked at the same company their entire career and have come up with the same set of buddies, sort of like the Delta Tau Delta fraternity that Wagoner joined when he was in business school. It's very hard to fire your old pals or even do things to make them uncomfortable. A couple years ago, Ford Motor Company was in danger of being run into the ground by the latest puddin'head descendant of old Henry. Now, I don't quite agree with that caricature of one of the Ford family, but that's Jack Lessenberry, so, hey, get stimulated. Think about it. But to their credit, but to Ford Motor Company's credit, they went out and hired an executive and engineer from Boeing, Alan Mulally, who has found it easier to make the tough decisions, presumably because he doesn't have 30 years of history with incompetent old bunkie in finance. Halberstam's book came out back in 1986. That's, again, The Reckoning. But evidently little has changed. What's even more astonishing about the fall of Wagoner is that all of this happened much more recently at GM. GM was losing billions back in the early 90s. Not much as now, but enough that the usually comatose board of directors became alarmed. They gave then-CEO Bob Stemple some time to fix it. But guess what? He couldn't fire his buddies. So the board staged a revolt, fired him, and installed John Small, or Smalley, I guess, M-N-A-L-E, Smale? John Smale, a one-time toothpaste salesman who rose to head Procter & Gamble as chairman of the board of GM. He hung around for 3 years and guided a new CEO, Jack Smith. The company recovered for a time. Ironically, that revolution marked the beginning of the rise of Rick Wagoner, who became chief financial officer as part of GM's 1992 coup. And just a footnote here, remember this is the time that Jack Smith also became the CEO and couldn't be found to comment by Michael Moore, our Michigan-bred documentarian, for his first documentary, okay, which was really all about why did GM just dump employees out of the Flint Buick Motors plant with no concern for them, you know, with no backup, no retraining. Why did they treat them so badly? And, of course, even in the documentary, it was stated that, oh, well, they only fired a small percent and the rest of their jobs are secure. Yeah, 3 years later, all gone, close the plant. That was a very old plant, I know, and remodeling and, bring it up to, I don't know, fire code or whatever would have cost a lot of money. Well, maybe they needed to tear it all down and just rebuild it. Maybe that would have been cheaper. But if Buick is such a hot car in China or anywhere else, and somebody said even Barack Obama, it's number one in quality, of all cars, according to J.D. Powers. I think that was the research company right now. But quality is not everything. You know, there's performance, handling, safety, a lot of other criteria, folks. And so a lot of people in the U.S. have decided that that Buick is not the car for them, obviously, because they're not buying it, in spite of the so-called quality. Just because a door slams shut well doesn't mean it's a car you want to have and drive, and it's not the most necessarily the most economical either. Those big, heavy-duty Buicks are not the most economical. There's no doubt about that one. Okay, they're not too bad, but they're not state-of-the-art, certainly. And Wagoner, 3 years ago, he actually conceded his worst mistake was killing the EV1 electric car program back in the 90s and not putting the right resources into hybrids. That's right. As we've been saying here, again, look at the documentary. It's on DVD. It came out a couple of years ago. Who killed the electric car? That is the EV1 from General Motors. If they would have kept it going, No, what did Wagoner do? He killed the EV1, and he decided to go with Hummer instead. That's when they started making Hummers, folks. And that's on the list to be eliminated from GM in the next, 6 months to a year or whatever. That was even on Wagoner's list, so I'm sure it's on the next guy's list, too. Unfortunately, Wagoner was too dull to comprehend why. He said it didn't affect profitability, but it did affect image, he said. Talk about not planning for the future, says Lessenberry. Wacky old Henry Ford once said that if he had asked consumers before starting out, they wouldn't have said they wanted an automobile at all. They would have said they wanted a faster horse. Yeah, sometimes you have to introduce new technology to people over their love for the status quo. And GM could have done it. I really think they could have. I know everybody that had a GM EV1 wanted to keep it, wanted to buy it, for gosh sakes. Look at that documentary, Who Killed the Electric Car? Listen to those people talk about it. Jay Leno, the talk show host, car aficionado back then, he loved it. Tom Hanks, who had one on loan, he loved it. And that was 1992, 93, 94 technology, folks. Think how much better it would be today with what we know about batteries and everything. If they were just kept developing it and people would have bought it slowly at first and it would have grown and grown and grown. Just talk about head in your sand. Now General Motors, Lessenberry concludes, and I know you're happy about this, has a little less than 2 months to try to invent a future into a corporate culture where vision has mostly been punished in the past. For all of our sakes, good luck with that. That's Jack Lessenberry's opinion from Metro Times this week. What do you think about that? Alan Mulally was interviewed on The Takeaway this morning on WDET radio. And before I talk more about Mulally, I want to mention this is the end of the pledge week for National Public Radio affiliates in Detroit. And I think also for RCJ, the Detroit Public Schools pledge drive, they're doing it at the same time. All non-commercial media, they need your individual support. Okay, and we're going to be asking in our once-a-year only pledge drive. There's no other non-commercial media in Detroit that only asks once a year, but WHFR. That's coming up starting April 19th. And boy, do we need your pledge. Now more than ever. And we're so cheap an operation, it doesn't take much to keep us going. But we need your support, and we'll make the whole pitch and talk about all the exciting things we're doing for the pledge drive to get your attention, that starting on the 19th, that's a Sunday, that's the time to do it. Oh, you can go to our website now and send us an email to whfr@hfcc.edu, and we'll send you the pledge envelope now. But, you know, that week is the week where we're going to get your attention, and you're going to decide, if you haven't given money before, you really want to help us because of how unique we are and what we have going for us that no other station does. But, hey, I gave a pledge to WDET this week because what they do, a commercial station can't do. No doubt about that one. And they have access to NPR News that we don't. And we're a public radio international affiliate, and we can't afford to subscribe to a news service like The Takeaway, which is PRI, by the way. And we could get them, but we can't afford them. But we can get Classical 24, and that's expensive, and that wonderful music service every morning. We pay money for that, as well as Mountain Stage on Sunday. So I know you want to support us. I know you do, and you're going to think about April 19th to the 25th as especially the time to listen and call us or go to our website. I know you will. Counting on you. In any event, now, Mullally. First of all, during their pledge drive today, I think they cut off half the interview with Mullally on The Takeaway. Well, that was unfortunate because he was getting questions from people, but it seemed to me that they cut out the whole second major portion of his interview segment, and that shouldn't happen on a pledge drive when you have something important like that, especially a pledge drive on a Detroit station. There are people want to hear the full Mullally interview, perhaps. But, of course, Ford Motor Company, because they did borrow a ton of money at decent rates a couple of years ago, anticipating the downturn, as well as they were cutting down and they were laying off and giving buyouts and that for 5-6 years now, because they could see the future, as well as having to, you know, generate new products and hybrids and things that even GM was slow to come up with, and Chrysler was almost nowhere on. So congratulations to Mullally and even some of the Ford family that helped support that move. I know here in Dearborn, it's self-interest. A lot of us employed by Ford, and as Ford goes, maybe not the nation of America, but as Ford goes, so does Michigan to a certain extent, and certainly Dearborn, in terms of the taxes they pay to the city and so on. Well, they don't pay that much. All those rebates and discounts and so on, because years ago they threatened to leave. Yeah, they didn't care. If you won't give us all these rebates and tax cuts, and we just move somewhere else. Move the whole world headquarters. You can tear it down if you want to, and we'll just move. That's big corporate opinions. But we're glad they're here, and we want them to stay, and we want good things for all the local businesses, okay? Although Ford is really a world business, there's no doubt about that, you know. So... Mm-mm. Somebody at the door, and we don't know about letting them in. I don't think there's anybody here to let them in. I hope they don't buzz in the background. Oh, well. Nonetheless, we're continuing with the Ford story. I just found out today from the Dearborn Chamber of Commerce that they now have, I think it's the first time ever, a merchandise store, a Ford merchandise store. And you just have to excuse me for a second. Sorry about that. I had to talk to somebody at the door. We don't have someone in the outside office right now. The federal government work study money ran out, and we can't pay any students to be receptionists for us. So there you go. See how we need the federal government for different stuff to keep this show flowing without a pregnant pause? Okay. Well, where is this merchandise store? This sells like Ford T-shirts and cars, and there kind of was a store like that at Greenfield Village in the Henry Ford Museum, in the Henry Ford complex. And I would think, and I can't figure this out, there must be a souvenir store in the Rouge Plant Tour building, too, that's opposite from Henry Ford Museum. But I haven't gone on the Rouge Tour from that facility. And so but you'd think people, after they tour the plant, they want to buy a souvenir. Maybe they just send them across the way to the gift shop at Henry Ford Museum, because they have a lot of little Ford model cars and well, stuff like that, although it's usually more historic things like old Model Ts and so on. Well, now they have their own merchandise store, and I'm just saying they finally, Ford has moved in the modern age in another way. It is located on Executive Plaza Drive, and I can't give you direct, it's not in a shopping mall or anything. It is southeast corner, so if you know your directions, not south, not east, but southeast corner of Ford Road and Southfield. There's some building there, okay? And the store is open Monday through Fridays, 9 to 5, and it sells Ford, like, souvenir logo items, T-shirts, ball caps, model cars, I assume. And I think that's a cool thing to do. Hey, if Disney can have a Disney store, you know, GM's got a GM store at the airport. And right across from it in the Northwest Terminal, that terminal that Northwest uses anyway, is the Henry Ford store. So in a way, Ford stuff and Ford memorabilia is being sold by the Henry Ford store, Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village people, along with their Henry Ford Museum, Greenfield Village stuff, right across from the GM store. So I don't know if GM has a merchandise store anywhere else around here, but it is something to have. And so, you know, spread the logo, spread the people that are wearing the word Ford on their chest, proudly, perhaps, or on their ball caps. It was kind of hard to find that stuff, except by mail order anyway, in the past. So another Ford has a better idea, wasn't there? No, it's General Electric has a better idea. General Electric has a bright idea. Whatever. I just think it's a cool thing. So if you can find the store and you really want some Ford stuff, there is one, and it's southeast corner on Executive Plaza Drive. Okay, that's just west of Mercury Drive, I think, between Ford Road and Southfield Expressway. So that's your scavenger hunt assignment for this weekend. Now 20 minutes to go. We'll look at some of the top headlines from the local papers, Dearborn Press and Guide, Dearborn Times Herald. Thank goodness they're both publishing still, even though Press and Guide, apparently their parent newspaper owner, is going into bankruptcy. And the Times Herald has dropped back to one issue a week. They were at two a week in the fall there for a while. But that's okay. I think we don't really need them more than once a week. I really believe that. I don't think we do need them more than once a week. But anyway, the Dearborn Towers down in Clearwater, Florida, that's owned by the city of Dearborn, apparently there's going to be a second appraisal of that. That is, how much are they worth? And again, Mayor O'Reilly, they do think that the appraisal is going to be lower, like all real estate has dropped in value, even in Florida, than it was the last time around. But they're hoping that if the city thinks the price is right for whatever their investment is, that the residents of the Dearborn Towers do get the first chance to buy it for themselves and own it as a so-called co-op. So that's all nice and fair, and we'll see how that works out for that facility. Because, you know, we weren't losing money as a city on that facility, but upcoming there's going to be some improvements needed. And so we might be losing money on it in the next couple of years, or if we had to raise rents for some of the people already there, I guess we can do that. Are some of them rent protected that live there now? But if we had to raise rents or give special assessments, then some of those people might have to move out. Couldn't afford to stay there anymore, and that wouldn't be fun. We were talking about development in West Dearborn. One of the owners of property there, Norman Newman, did tell, say, Friday to the Press and Guide, that's a week ago Friday, a week ago today, that he has, quote, something in the works, unquote, in the way of a possible new tenant that would set up shop in the long-vacant Pier 1 Imports and Inca Computer Builders on Newman Street. Guess why they named it Newman Street, folks. Just west of Military in Dearborn, because this is Norman Newman that owns all the businesses there. He owns all the property there, okay, that the businesses are on. And how long, though? Oh, how long has Inca Computer been out of business now? 8 years? 10 years? Okay, Pier 1 Imports, that was more recent, but still. Paper currently covers the windows of the site, which features a large sign that says, redevelopment coming soon, above Newman's contact information. Asked about whom the prospective client would be, Newman said he couldn't release the information at this time. I'd like to, but I can't. I'm sorry. Well, of course, if it's not a done deal, you really shouldn't put pressure unduly on one or the other. Newman said the building that housed the Tenney Street Roadhouse, which is also up for lease, has someone also interested in it as well. We did mention Tenney Street last week. Go to our website to see what I said. So we hope that moves along. Okay, we hope that rents are low enough for someone who owns, personal opinion here, no disrespect, Mr. Newman, but for someone who owns so much property, we hope you get an income, some kind of income from it, rather than just letting it sit there, and guess who's got to pay property taxes on it? You do, of course. So we hope that for the good of the community, maybe you'll give these people a break on the rent, the lease amount, maybe, huh? Good for everybody. And I know you'll do the right thing. And, of course, as a private business person, I can't tell you what to do. No. But I think that's the community sentiment. Okay. Moving right along. And good luck with that. Yeah. Always like to support entrepreneurs and when they're trying to move ahead. Support your local business. We did that last week and the week before, but that's extremely important. Check out local business first. And one of the things you should do, and I know we get out of this habit, is as one of the columnists last week did that I mentioned, he drove actually up and down almost every major street in East and West Dearborn, taking note of stores that were closed and stores that were new that he'd never seen before that look exciting and trying to make a go of it. Things they should check out. And these days, in fact, you know, it used to be you could look up every business would be in like the AT&T Yellow Pages. Well, that still exists, but there's other Yellow Page books. YellowPages.com, I think, took over, and they have a book too. So not every local business is in one or the other of these books that have yellow-like colored pages. And that's unfortunate. So you don't have any document that automatically comes, any publication that comes to your house that has all the local businesses in it by category. And so the only other answer is, I guess, search for it on the internet, maybe. Dearborn as the first word there. Like Dearborn furnace repair or something. You know, I don't know. Let's see what happens. But other than that, drive up and down the streets and take a look at what's really there. All the streets, East and West Dearborn. And if there's a new place that looks interesting, then go for it. Okay. Well, we want to get Jim Hightower's comment on Afghanistan in here. So that's coming up next here. Excuse me while I reach. And let's take a listen. The triple surge, as he calls it, in Afghanistan.
Apparently, springtime is surge time in Afghanistan. President Obama is launching a new expanded American adventure to stabilize this historically unstable, impoverished warlord state that's ruled by hundreds of fractious, heavily armed tribal leaders. Some 36,000 American troops are already there, but it has not gone well for them. They've lost ground in a grinding, deadly war that's now in its eighth year, costing us taxpayers $2 billion a month. What to do? Spend more, cry the war hawks. So, Obama has announced a double surge strategy for Afghanistan. First will be a surge of 17,000 more soldiers. Second will be a civilian surge of hundreds of U.S. economic development specialists who will try to win the hearts and the cooperation of Afghan villagers through various efforts to lift their living standards. But look, what's that coming over the hill? Why, it's a third surge that Obama did not mention. Private military contractors. It was such profit-seeking outfits as Halliburton and Blackwater that ran rampant in Iraq, doing deep damage. Yet, here we go again with a private army in Afghanistan. More than 71,000 of these corporate freelancers are already operating there, and hordes more are preparing to go as Pentagon spending ramps up for Obama's war. Pentagon Chief Robert Gates claims that these armed employees, i.e. mercenaries, are necessary to provide security for U.S. bases and convoys. Say what? America has to hire private security firms to guard our army? Yes, we're told, with no explanation or even a wink at the absurdity of it. This is Jim Hightower saying, meanwhile, think about this. The private contractors protecting our troops will most likely not even be Americans. Of the nearly 4,000 security firms in Afghanistan, only 9 are from the U.S. Today's commentary is underwritten by Wiley & Sons, publishers of Hightower's new book titled Swim Against the Current, Even a Dead Fish Can Go with the Flow, now available wherever books are sold.
That wasn't a commercial, by the way, folks. It's just available if you want to read and study more about Jim Hightower's opinions and ideas for social action. I love social action. Democratic. Voice of the people. It's a wonderful thing. If we ever let it really get started. Anyway, yeah. And you know, those 71,000 troops that are mercenaries, they cost a ton more money than our own people, okay? But you just don't want those numbers there out in the public because the public will actually look pretty bad, you know, or look badly at, oh, we've got all those troops there, shame on us. All those troops at such a large number. Well, they cover it up by just hiring mercenaries. It costs 2, 3, 4 times as much. And mercenaries, you know, as was proven with Blackwater, even though they've been somewhat discredited for their lack of following any appropriate rules of war in Iraq, they can just go around and sort of like, I'm sorry, it seems like they can just shoot anybody they want to. And not be criticized or brought up on trial later. And, well, they're just hired guns, you know, and sometimes they get a little out of control. But what do you want from hired guns? They're not really U.S. soldiers. Well, that's just bogus, you know. It's true. The rules of war, well, they really shouldn't be. If you're at war, I'm sorry, anything goes except nuclear destruction that's going to kill you too and kill the planet. That doesn't go. But I understand that war should be war, and the hawks certainly, well, he said something that's hawk-like, you know. However, I don't think we should ever have war, because I'm a pacifist, and I know the value of peace, and how we all really love it deep down, don't we? Any of you who don't love peace, you got a problem, you know, and some of the best soldiers, Colin Powell and so on. War is bad. We should never do it. It's the last option. It's not really an option even. Shouldn't be. An option, even. There's got to be other ways. There has to be other ways. There are other ways. But on this Afghan thing, today, talking about the warlords, and, you know, there's an Afghan government, but it's very corrupt. Even Obama said the government that we set up there, is it Hamid Karzai? Is that his name? Did I get that right? His government, maybe not him personally, as corrupt as you can get. You know, blackmail, bribery, you know, self-interest. And the Afghan government, this is just in the news this morning in the New York Times, the Afghan government just passed a law saying it's okay for a husband to rape his wife. Now, you might think that's a contradiction in terms, but yes, there is such a thing as rape within marriage. And if a person says no, they don't want to be sexually intruded upon, okay, sexually penetrated, they are able to say no. It's a wonderful concept. Consenting adults, both of them have to agree, married or not. Okay? That really respects every individual's right to maintain their own self and privacy. Okay? Wonderful, wonderful concept. I believe it's part of our democracy and our belief in individual freedoms and individual liberty. And there you go, just like Saudi Arabia. Wives, oh, you can be raped anytime by your husband. Anytime he feels like he needs sex, you got to provide him with it. They just passed that law. Now they're looking into whether or not, is that really legal? Well, they just passed it. They didn't even think about whether it's legal or not. No, that's the right thing. Now, is that Islam that's at fault there? No, I don't believe so. If you read the Quran in that, I don't think you'll see that kind of horrible third-class, fourth-class treatment for women, especially women who happen to be married to men, enslaved, if you will. Those are the governments that do it, who say, oh, we're Muslim, we're Islamic. Yeah, they say that, but their interpretation is so weird, like the Taliban. But even the Afghan government now that's there, that's wildly corrupt, they don't almost sound like Taliban, you know, in some of these principles. So, are all of our advisors going to convince them that women should have equal rights? I don't think they'll do that. So I personally happen to feel, I don't know how you feel about it, but this so-called war is not going to work. The Russians couldn't get Afghanistan under control. And they threw a ton of money in military in there for years and years and years. And you can't say that we have better drones than they do. Okay, they didn't have any drones, but, you know, these robot aircraft. It's not Afghanistan, it's Pakistan, I'm sorry. And so we're using Afghanistan as a staging platform for Pakistan, who basically doesn't want us attacking, at least not with soldiers. But our drones, okay, send your drones into the mountains, that's cool. Oh my gosh. Yeah, get out. Stop it. The only way to stop fighting is to stop fighting. Okay? One thing I'll say about the Taliban, and this is quite ironic, isn't it? They stopped the drug trade. It's the only good thing I can say about the Taliban in Afghanistan. When they controlled the government, you know, making money from growing illegal drugs and selling them to the rest of the world, not necessarily using them yourself, they thought that was immoral. Well, good for them. It is immoral to all humanity. And now, guess what? The government is so corrupt over there since we got there that we don't care about growing poppies and selling heroin around the world. We just want something else, whatever it is. And so production has grown by leaps and bounds. And it's back worse than ever. I think Afghanistan is the number one or number two provider of heroin for the whole world again. Whereas the Taliban had almost completely eliminated it. How did they do that? I mean, in a way, the countryside and all that, by being totally ruthless dictators and just shooting anybody without even asking questions. I mean, talk about mercenary armies not having rules. The Taliban army had no rules, and they was always enforced by some of these tribal power brokers locally. Well, kill him, by the way. I don't like his looks. He shaved his beard off. Why don't you just shoot him? You know, I mean, that kind of indiscriminate dictatorships, petty dictatorships throughout Afghanistan. Just get out of there. Get the heck out. You think they're going to have democracy in Afghanistan? No way. And I doubt there's going to be democracy in Iraq either. But if they're moral, maybe that wouldn't be so bad. All right. How much time do we have left? 7 minutes. Okay, get talking, Koronik. We talked about the Dearborn Teacher Union negotiations coming up, and everybody's optimistic, but people probably have to be laid off and people will take pay cuts. I mentioned some businesses. Parisian Bistro in West Dearborn actually was made fun of on the Jay Leno show a week or so ago, according to the Times Herald here. And somebody sent in to a segment that Jay Leno has that makes fun of ads throughout the U.S. that Parisian Bistro was advertising their cuisine in this ad. Italian, Mediterranean, and Middle Eastern cuisine. And, of course, quite ironic that a place called Parisian Bistro doesn't have any French cuisine. And, in fact, they don't really, I have to say. I mean, I've been in France. I know they don't really have French dishes. I mean, crepe Suzette's or... No, they don't have French dishes, although the French are more into sauces, you know, rather than uniquely described dishes. Bouillabaisse, there's another French dish that I can say. That's a sort of a fish chowder soup stew, and they don't have that either. But, hey, the good news is he's getting a lot more business, and he thinks maybe it's because he was mentioned on Jay Leno. So good. And who said that? And certainly the Hollywood stars know this. Sometimes even bad publicity can be good for your career, which is unfortunate. City finds a way to go green and cut costs. Okay, and then, well, I can't say whether I go to Parisian Bistro or not. That would be an endorsement or a slam either way. But they are one of our key businesses in West Dearborn, and we need to support local businesses, right, folks? Okay, let's turn the pages here. Okay, let's go to the Wednesday Press and Guide. Coming right up is Highway 61 with Joanne Korchinska at 2 o'clock today from 2 to 6. The usual Highway 61 Blues Cruise with Joanne K. And we're looking forward to that, of course. So stay tuned for that coming right up after this hour is over. Parking, East parking deck leaks. Unbelievable. The city of Dearborn is currently holding a portion of its payment to the contractor for the East parking deck in West Dearborn. Jumbo and Dumbo, as Doug Thomas would say. So the one more to the east, closer to where our businesses are, have a leak in the deck. And they say that the city's withholding between $20,000 and $25,000 to the company that built the structure, Turner Construction, decides whether or not it wants to be the one to fix it or to bring in somebody else to fix it. Now, it seems strange that this is not that old, and didn't I say something last week about how wonderfully well-built they were, all that concrete, and they're worth every penny of those millions, even though we don't need them, that were spent, and we still have a lot to pay off? But well-built, I said. Well, now, East One is leaking. So we'll see who pays for that. Hopefully not the city's going to pay for it either way, I guess. It's out of warranty. What do they say? All right. You know, inquiring minds want to know here. So the roof membrane is pulling away from the building, causing water to trickle down in the basement level of the east deck. So don't park in the basement level, folks. It's not a structural damage to the deck, but it just gets a little wet down there. Okay, and it looks like they don't have any warranty on that work. And I don't say how long ago the decks were put in, but it wasn't at least 4 or 5 years ago? At least that? It seems just wrong for modern construction to not last 20 years. They should have a warranty on those things. They really should. Yep. But then the businesses just go out of business and reform so that they couldn't go back and follow up on the warranty. They'd find a way around that if there was such a thing. And Doug Thomas, can't read this totally because we have 2 minutes to go here in the hour, letter to the editor from Ann Pelton Bennett from Pelton-Bennett in Dearborn, talks about Doug Thomas and his statements that we featured, always controversial, always very, in some cases, confrontational. She says, basically summing up here, he's more of a gadfly than an honest candidate. So if he tries to run for mayor, maybe she wouldn't support him. Nonetheless, she does indicate that he should keep speaking out. He's good at this. So he's a gadfly, apparently, that's saying the right things. But for some reason, she doesn't think that necessarily he should be mayor. I love the conclusion, though. She says, I attended, because it mentions Henry Ford Community College, the people that own the license to the station, okay, even though they're not responsible for what I say. They didn't tell me what to say. She says, I attended a Henry Ford Community College women's seminar where the words of being honest and having a passion for the truth to be a part of a greater world for us all, she said it brought tears to her eyes. I know Dearborn has so much to offer the world, but until each one of us gets active and joins Thomas in speaking out, I remain doubtful. So, thank you, Ann Pelton Bennett of Dearborn, for those comments. And yes, I would like to believe that all of our classes, as well as our women's seminar here at the college, we're not called the ivory tower for nothing. If we can't start the rumor, the suggestion that being honest and having a passion for the truth is an essential part, the core part of a greater whole that'll make the world better for all of us, I don't know what can be. You know, I really don't. So thank you for that comment, and maybe we'll get Doug Thomas on here to talk for a while in person and say these things. That's always exciting. Well, take care out there, as I always say on Fridays, on this weekend. This is Jay Koronek. Thank you for listening to the new WHFR Journal on WHFR-FM, the station making waves. This is WHFR Dearborn. Coming up next, Highway 61 with Joanne Korczynska. I think I'm going to use my Bones theme one more time at the end. I just love the sound of it. So coming up shortly is Joanne Korczynska, Highway 61. Take care out there.